What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Daniel Clowe, whose book, A Future in Flames, is about wildfires in the U.S., bushfires in Australia. Same thing. It's a phenomenon, although there are different vegetation, different hemispheres, different wind conditions. And yet, what do you do if you live in a fire zone, which apparently, as far as I can tell, all of Australia is eventually in a fire zone? There's a difference between fire risk parts of Australia and fire-likely parts of Australia, vast parts of the center of the country. I've never been there, Danielle, so help me if I get this wrong. The West and the North, Northern Territory and the center are without many people and without many settlements. The settlements are along the coast, the South Coast and the Southeast Coast and the East Coast. And those areas are fire risk. So we come to what kind of fires? Daniel has a whole section devoted to the big ones. They're not every year. We've mentioned 1939, but they come often enough so that you must think about them whenever you change your address. Daniel, you started early in life before the babies. You lived in urban settings. I'm going to guess Adelaide. Maybe you lived in Sydney. But you moved to Victoria, the southern part of the continent. And you moved into the outskirts of a city where one of the first people who called upon you most kindly was the captain of the fire brigade. You're early in your marriage. Were you ready for that, that he was going to recruit you and your husband to be part of a fire brigade? Did you know that was coming?
Yeah, I think actually it was something that we did know about before we moved into the area. We were aware of the fire risks, and we did select the property on the basis of its ability to be safe from fires. So yeah, I think I'd always grown up with a fire risk. I lived in rural areas when I was a child, and I remember sitting watching a fire approaching. We lived in a caravan in the bush, which is possibly the worst thing you can do in terms of fire risk. And I remember living in Sydney for a little while and fires burning right into the national parks. Smoke coming over. So fire is very much apparent. Although you're relatively safe in a city, cities are not particularly in the middle. The edges are prone to bushfires, but not the middle bit. But yeah, everywhere in Australia is really a fire risk area. You can have fires pretty anywhere where there's native vegetation. There's a risk of fires. So yeah, it is something we were prepared for. But I guess we, like most people, we kind of underestimated the amount of effort you have to go to keep yourself safe. It does take constant effort and constant planning.
And planning. And you have Danielle has a very attractive blog that she keeps up to date about the koala. Now that's a wonderful koala. Does that koala in your blog have a name?
No, they just moved through. So we have numerous koala visitors from time to time.
He was a scene stealer when I saw him. In any event, you also, when you moved into Adelaide Hills, which is South Australia, this is Victoria. If I get your geography wrong, forgive me, I'm learning.
No, that's fine. You're doing really well.
The part that I hadn't occurred to me is that you had to protect your underfloor spaces. What does that mean? What were you thinking about?
So houses that are built on stumps and have a wooden floor are very vulnerable to fire because, they often have stuff under, if you store stuff underneath them, the embers can get under the house and set fire to the house. So when you're making a campfire, you sit your sticks up against each other. So there's a little bit of airflow through underneath and that helps you get the fire going. If you put your wood right on the ground, it's going to be really hard to light. So the same thing applies to houses except in reverse. You don't want them to light. So houses on concrete slabs with sealed off understory is underfloor space is a much safer designed for bushfires. So yeah, we moved from Victoria after the major fire, the Black Saturday fires, to South Australia. But South Australia is also vulnerable to fires, so we had to take that into account. But we built our house here, so this house that we live in now is built for bushfires.
Yes, I have to picture what happens. It's not the fire coming up to the edge of your property and leaping onto your roof, which is what happens in California, if I understand. I've never been in a wildfire in California. I've only watched video. You have embers blowing ahead of the fire. So that's what Wells, I think that's what Wells meant about guerrilla. Even though you can't, the fire's not right outside your window, your house is vulnerable to those embers. And a black smoke, is that what happens? It blinds you?
Yeah, look, these things are universal. So this will be the same in California as it is in Australia. You can have, you have ground fires. So the fire naturally burns along the ground. But in an intense fire, it will spread up into the, if it's hot enough, it will spread up into the trees. And then you get a canopy fire. Canopy fires are harder to sustain, but they still need the heat from the ground. So that's why managing your undergrowth is really important to try and stop it getting up into the trees. Once it's up in the trees and you start to get that really extreme fire weather, then sure, you can get flames travelling quite a long distance in high winds, which fires create themselves, so they generate their own weather. So those are all the sort of horrific disaster scenarios. But the big risk to houses is mostly ember attack. The ground fires are dangerous if you have a lot of bush close to your house, which is why we recommend having a cleared area around your house. And the further the better. You know, in Australia, in rural areas, 100 metres is the management zone for fire around your house, for ground fire. Once it's further away than that, it's embers that you need to watch out for. And embers come down like red rain in a serious fire. But they, you know, if you think about, if you flick a match, a lit match onto dry grass or you know, anywhere, it's not necessarily going to catch. Most times it'll go out, and that's the same with embers. Most of them go out, but you've got to be ready to get the little ones out that do catch. So it's not like a being firebombed or something. It depends on the circumstances.
It's 2009. You're at home with your daughters and your dog. Your husband, Mike, is at the fire brigade. And you're getting reports all the time. The phone's ringing back and forth. Where's the fire? When are we leaving? This is the wonderful part. Everybody's drinking water. Your youngest daughter is filling up everything in the house with water. The only one who drinks is the dog. Who it upsets his stomach. So it's a wonderful scene. But I want to say this day, everybody survived. Mike is fine. You don't know for a few hours. However, this is the part where you have much attention to stay or go. Stay or go. Mm-hmm. They're fire ban days. There are not many of them. What'd you say, 10 a year in the part of Australia you live in? So those are the days you can leave even before you see a fire. Is that correct? You just say it's because of the weather conditions. What are the weather conditions you would watch for on a fire ban day?
Yeah, so fire ban days are when fires are not permitted to be lit at all anywhere. So that's what a fire ban day means. So we now have different ratings. So we also have warning day. You know, we have more and more fire ban days. It's becoming like the whole of summer is a total fire ban day. So and beyond. So it's no longer just 10. It's a lot more than that now. And on those days, on those high-risk days, whatever they are, you need to decide whether you're going to stay in your home or whether you leave early. And the policy is you should leave on every high-fire risk day. And certainly I did that when my children were small. But as they got older, I decided that I would stay and defend. Now, that's a big decision. You should only do that if you're really well prepared. Sometimes we might get caught out by a fire that starts really close to our home and it might be too late to leave. And leaving late is a very dangerous strategy. You really want to have a backup plan in case you get stuck at home. You need to have a safe place to shelter in a worst case scenario. It's not something you want hope happens, but it may happen. So it's very much something you have to think through, something you have to talk to your household about. You may need to make sure everybody knows what your plan is that everybody's on board with it and that everybody's prepared for the different eventualities that might happen.
The wind is a major factor, and I tried to get an understanding of what you're watching for. At one point, you live in a gully, and the wind goes right over the top of the gully, endangering your neighbor's house, but not yours. But does the wind come before the fire? If the fire is approaching, does the wind pick up and blow your way? Does it?
It depends. Yeah, it depends on the weather. So you can have, you know, the winds of the day. So hot. We often get hot northerlies in Australia that blow off the desert. They're quite dangerous because they're hot and dry. So any windy day is a danger if you've got fires running. So wind is a big factor. We all know that if, you know, you're trying to get your fire going, you blow on it to get it going. So oxygen plus fuel plus lack of water is the triangle for bad fire conditions. And they're the days we've got to worry. But once a fire gets going, it actually starts a cycle that generates wind. So it can actually cause the wind to get worse than what it was before. And the other problem are wind changes. So what happens is we get a fire that starts and it follows the wind. And so you can imagine a long, thin line of fire just moving in one direction, gradually getting a bit wider, but it leaves a long trail of burning behind it. Now, if the wind changes, you've then suddenly got that long line becomes a fire front that moves forward. And then you've got a huge fire that runs. So wind changes are a big risk in fires.
All right, the wind has changed. It's time to go. Can't defend the house. You get in the car and you start driving with conditions that can collapse, visibility conditions. The highway, you're going through the fire, or the fire suddenly approaches you. And Danielle, the scariest moment in her book is if you're caught in your car in a fire. The first thing you do is you turn the air conditioner off. You close all the windows as tight as possible. You leave your engine running, your headlights on. I'm following Danielle's reporting. And here comes the scary part. A woolen blanket. You need to duck down with a woolen blanket below the glass. Why, Daniel? What does a woolen blanket mean?
Yeah, so basically this is not advice of what you should plan to do. It's a terrible thing to leave late and have to escape in your car. That's the worst thing. You don't want to do that. You want to have left early. But in the circumstances where you are caught in your car, it's always a good idea to travel with a woolen blanket in your car and water. So that's just standard summertime thing that you have in your car. Woolen blankets don't catch fire rather than polyester, but they're basically a thermal shield. So the main thing is radiant heat that kills people in fires. It's not usually the flames themselves. If they can, obviously that will kill you, but radiant heat is the big killer. So you've got to try and put a barrier between yourself and the heat source. So, you know, if you're in front of the fire and a campfire or something and it gets a bit hot and you put a blanket in front of you, it'll shield you from the heat. That's what you're doing in the car. So the important thing with cars is to stay in a cleared area. Modern cars actually perform reasonably well, you know, in fires. You don't want them catching fire. Cars do burn. But if you park somewhere where there's not much fuel, that's the safest place to be. So look for a cleared area, a close mode, oval, something as far away from vegetation as you can. But staying in the car does offer some protection from heat. It's not a perfect solution, but probably one of the worst things people do is can get out of the car and run. And you can't really outrun a fire. And the radiant heat is very dangerous.
And drinking water to reduce your dehydration. So that's why you have water in the car, not to wet the blanket, but to drink for yourself.
If there's little fires, you know, once the fire front's passed and you get out of the car, there's still going to be little fires around, so you want a bit of water to try and put the fires out as well. So water is always a good thing to have around fires. Wetting the blanket is a bit fraught because sometimes that can turn to steam, which is not a great thing. So, I'm not sure what the advice is on that. But, you know, it's not an ideal situation to be in. These are last resort things. But I do put a woolen blanket in my car and a big tub of water every summer. So just in case you get caught somewhere.
The book is A Future in Flames. Daniel Claude is the author. When we come back, the future and El Nino and climate change.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Life with CIDP can be tough, but the Thrive Team, a specialized squad of experts, helps people living with CIDP make more room in their lives for joy. Watch Rare, Well Done.
An all-new reality series, Rare, Well Done, offers help and hope to people across the country who live with the rare disease CIDP. Watch the latest episode now, exclusively on RareWellDone.com.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.